Today on the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast, we're going to be talking about some just random feedback we haven't gotten to catch up on lately because we've been doing lots of shows lately, which has been awesome. But now we're in that like random time. You ready for some random time, Ashley?
Oh, I'm ready. Oh, I grab the bag.
It's your favorite time of year. All right, all that right after this.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast. My name is Matthew Carroll.
And I'm Ashley Coffin.
Whew. I feel like I told you all this before we got started. You know, because I was an hour late, but I scheduled all my podcasting for today. And then I scheduled my mom's doctor's appointments for tomorrow. And then somehow I messed up and I scheduled them both for today. And so, yeah, I'm running an hour late, so I feel like I just rushed in to sit in the chair. I'm still breathing. I'm still, like,
getting your breath,
getting it through, feeling better. how you been doing, man?
It's good. It's been a crazy week over here in the Northeast. We had, you know, we got snow on Tuesday that we had talked about last week, and I was stuck at home. And then we got snow Friday, and I was stuck at home again. So I've just kind of been, like, in the house doing snow stuff. We haven't had snow in so long, you know, watching people's cars get stuck on our road because we have a U-shaped road.
Yeah, that's no good.
And it's not a grid road. Like, our road has huge craters in it. I don't know how the township has allowed it to happen, but it is rough to get up and down. So, like, I saw our neighbors called a tow truck the other day to try to get them out in the middle of the snow, and they couldn't do anything after an hour. Ken had to go out, my husband, and help dig, and they finally got up. But I was like, okay, so we're not going anywhere in my go-kart Mario Kia Rea hatchback. So we've just kind of been here. But what was fun is I got to talk to Bill. Bill from Bill and Ashley's Terror Theater. Bill Bria is in Utah right now at the Sundance Film Festival, just doing all the things. So we got to put out, we recorded an episode last night of mostly about the main horror movies that were coming out, because he's seen about 15 films and has about four more to go over the next day. He should be back by the time this is out, but, yeah, that we just got to, he got to tell me off air about a whole bunch of really cool movies that are coming out, but that aren't horror. So yeah, cool. Catch that. We talk about it a little at the end. So if you're interested in what happened at Sundance, yeah, that should be out within the next week and a half.
That's really, really cool. Bill and Ashley's Terror Theater. Everybody check it out. I always check it out, but that sounds like a really fun, newsworthy episode.
Insider stuff.
Yeah. Insider stuff. Bill's always so insidery.
He's got all the details.
Yeah, he does. He has all the details. Well, we're mostly doing just like random feedback today, kind of catching up on lots of you guys who've sent in things over the months and months. And well, I guess like the last 2 months, really, we've just been like really busy. But I want to talk about one thing. I watched a Screen Crush video yesterday.
And is that the guy who talks to his little dog?
Yes. Yes, it is. I like that guy. Okay. He's good.
He's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Reminds me of every guy I worked with at Blockbuster Video.
Yeah, he's standing in that video store. Like, yeah. Feels very much like that. Yeah, I like that. I like his channel on YouTube. But he did this video yesterday on, like, a theory of where the MCU is going or whatever. And it was like, he was talking about the themes that they're really developing in Phase 4, basically. And a lot of, like, it was a lot based on gore. And, like, his whole thing was like, who gave Gore the Necro Sword? Like, why did the Necro Sword come to Gore? Like, was that someone?
Oh.
So he has this whole theory about it. Anyway, his theory is hit or miss. Like, some of it's like, oh yeah, that's compelling, and some of it feels like a stretch, but which he admits to some degree. But like, it just made me like, man, he just really laid out a case for like how many like God, and we talked about this a lot 2 years, like the last 2 years or whatever. And we kind of stopped talking about it with the multiverse stuff really like picking up, but like there was so much cool stuff they lined up, and I guess this is another like little bit of a disappointment in the last few phases rant, because like I just feel like they did so much to set up some cool God stuff with the Eternals. While, you know, whether you like it or not, it's there's mixed reviews, but like, it did a lot of setup with like the gods and the celestials and yeah. like what who them being gods, and then the Gore the God Butcher stuff, and like I don't know, it just got me really like thinking about how cool it was that they did so much to line up all this god stuff, and we had talked about it in depth. No, not to mention Khonshu and like the Egyptian right. gods, like all of that was happening around the same time, and it felt so. And I kind of at some point it just stopped being about that, or they stopped. It looked like they were going somewhere with it. It looked like all right. that stuff with Bast being, you know, in all the Black Panther stuff, and like the avatars of the gods, and then the gods themselves, like Thor and seeing Olympus, and like all this stuff. This just like the pantheon of gods, and then of course Gore the God Butcher being like a big part of that. Like,
who was the god they set up at the end of Thor? Was it Ares or Hercules?
Hercules.
Okay.
Hercules and Zeus still being alive. Yeah, exactly. So like, there's all this god stuff. Anyway, his whole theory is kind of like. It's based on some comic stuff and some, like, just speculation, but his theory was this big, like, where did he get the Necrosword? And he thinks that, like, Galactus gave him the Necrosword, like, ooh. Which is, like, Galactus manipulating, like, Galactus forged the Necrosword because he is trying to stop the gods from, like, revamp. Well, and this is what he tied it to the multiverse of it all, because he tied it to, like, that Galactus is from a previous multiverse or a previous like version of the multiverse, and he travels the he survives multiversal destruction events. Or something.
Oh, cool.
And so like,
okay.
Anyway, it was interesting. It was an interesting theory. I dug it, but like also just like the main thing it made me think about, and I wanted to talk about it a little bit, was just like how we had this really cool, it's another case where we keep talking about how like they're not bringing ideas back quick enough. They're not bringing through lines, tying it together. We keep saying tying it together, but really, after I saw the Marvels, I just realized, like, not even tying things together. I just need things to come back sooner. Like,
right.
It's the MCU has gotten so spread out that it's not like I dislike any of it. I like it all. But, like,
right.
It's like there's these little corners of it that just like, oh, man, Moon Knight's so good. And then it's been 2 years, and we still have no idea.
Total crickets on that.
Yeah,
total
crickets. No clue if it's coming out again. It's like they stopped understanding about like how the hype train worked, like the PR of the MCU, and like pushing the narrative forward, and like driving me to watch the next thing because the last thing teased the next thing, you know, and like.
Right, I feel like that's where the things at the end started to fall off for me.
Yeah.
End credit scenes and stuff like that, because it did used to get you excited for what was coming, and then now it's not, or it is and it goes nowhere. Like
exactly, Shang-Chi. Like it, we've lost, and we've talked about this ad nauseum. But that just watching that Screen Crush video and him tying all the gods together, and almost everything he said is stuff we had talked about in the past on this show.
Well, because he listens to our show and steals our content.
Yeah, stealing all our content, guy with the dog.
I'd like a 10% and your little dog too, sir.
No,
you and your little dog.
a lot of it is just like bringing up the fact that there's just a ton of god stuff going on. But I was watching this, and I'm like, these are really cool theories. I love all of this, but I haven't heard about any of that since, you know, Love and Thunder, which when was that? Like last right. year, a year and a half ago?
Yeah,
it was
at
like
this point.
November of like 22 or something. It just feels like they aren't planning well for us to keep the hype train moving. And it doesn't all have to end in Endgame. Like we can be excited about a movie. It doesn't all have to be as big as Endgame, but it does have to be connected. That's the whole like promise of the MCU. And I don't right. even mean, like, they have to bring them all together for a big Avengers movie. I just mean, like, connect one movie to another movie.
Yeah. The only... I'm wondering if, with all the Secret Invasion, you know, negativity, the only thing that could make that good for me is if they get going on Thunderbolts. And I know I saw something of Sebastian Stan recently saying they're just about to get started on mm-hmm. it. But I'm like, how long ago did you talk about that movie? How long has it been? Do we have to have the first Captain America movie with Falcon before we can have the Thunderbolts movie? But obviously the Skrull thing needed to happen because the president's got to get mad. And then I'm just like, where are we mm-hmm. going? And it just feels like this waiting game.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I called that dude and it's like 2 weeks now. And I'm like, I guess he's not calling me back.
Right.
You know?
Right. I completely agree with you. Like, it feels like like certain storylines are ghosting us. Like,
getting stood up.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And I really think that's a big part of it. I feel like there's this, like, just lack of, follow through. And like some of it is, I think, Marvel questioning themselves and recalibrating after like, oh, this show didn't get as numbers we thought, so let's not follow that storyline. Let's go over here. But I think what they're forgetting is like, sometimes it's the follow through that makes the first one better. You know what I mean? Like you see the next one and you go, and the first one starts to feel like a classic when you watch the second or the third one, you know?
Yeah. It's kind of asking for disaster if you keep changing your story.
Oh yeah. You can't ever have this like connected universe if you keep changing your mind. And I don't know how much they've changed their mind. I think there's been a little bit because of like COVID, obviously, and then strikes, and like some of that is out of their control, and like some of the stories have changed because they've just thought better of it, and then the like sort of negative critical reception of Phase 4. But like, yeah, I just need them to start like giving me some through lines. Just give me through lines. I don't need like a big universe tie-in. I just need through lines.
Yeah, can we know what the pinging is in the middle of space towards the bracelets? Can we know?
Yeah.
Somebody.
Anyway, it just like, I definitely not like, didn't want to start this on a downer necessarily. I just like, that really got me, it weirdly got me excited because like thinking about all that stuff, all the dangling threads they could tie together because this guy from Screen Crush is doing like this, you know, he's talking about all the dangling threads and he's making a theory that ties them all together. And it's like, oh yeah. That's amazing. Do that or do something, you know, like look at the dangling threads you have out in the world and like, and make a path for them to start making some sort of like touches on those previous work.
Yeah.
Give me like a reason to go back and revisit Eternals, you know, because like,
yes, please do.
Yeah.
I mean, make it make sense.
Well, like if you see the next Eternals thing, or like can you see the next, and you start to love one of those characters, and then you're like, oh, you know, that character is great, and then you go back and rewatch, and there's so many things like that where like I always think of Buffy when I think about this concept, but like Buffy season one is kind of universally told like you have to get through season one is what people always say, like when they want people to get into
Buffy.
Really?
Yeah. I love season one.
I do too. But I was
we were Whedon people, though.
Well, I wasn't before. Well, I guess I was. I liked Firefly.
You like Firefly.
Yeah, Firefly, and I went back for Buffy. But, like, I was always told, like, it's a great show, you just gotta get past season one. And, like, I can see what they're saying, and I think the first time I ever watched it, I was kind of like, okay, getting through it. But then on subsequent watches, I love season one. It's because I know the characters. So it's like the life that the characters are given in season two, three, four, through seven, like, makes me love season one even more because I see the like, I see those characters in there even if they haven't been brought out yet, you know?
That's so funny. I never even thought about people going back and discovering Buffy and binging it now because I remember watching the premiere live Thursday night on the WB or whatever it was, and I always watched it straight through on there. So I've only with Ken did I go back and we like binged watched it, but he. Yeah, I didn't even think about, because I guess if you watch it from the beginning like that, that was the greatest thing I'd seen. I loved the movie, and I was like, this is amazing, we're continuing it, but why was she a senior in the other movie? I'm not going to ask any questions. but yeah, no, that's so funny, because I just forget about that sometimes. Like, oh yeah, I watched that movie live on syndicated television.
And
now
we're going to go into a little bit of a Buffy podcast, but like, I love Buffy, but when it was on the air, I never watched it, but the people that liked it in my life were, and I truly regret not being more respectful of these people. I wasn't ever mean to them. They were actually some of my closest friends, but they were such fangirls of Buffy and like in the most cringe way and most like, they just love the dudes on the show. So I always watched it and I was like, or I didn't watch it. I watched them talk about it. Like we'd be in class together in high school and they'd be talking about that show and they would be talking about it like just the love story. That's all they ever talked about was the love story. And now I finally watched Buffy and Angel, believe me, I cry on multiple episodes because of the love story. Like theirs is a forever love.
She has to. No spoilers.
Yeah, no spoilers. But like, I love the love story once I finally went back and watched it. But like, I was a little judgmental when I was in high school because I was with all my female friends that loved Buffy.
Yeah. You're like, screw this David Boreanaz guy.
Yeah, who's this guy? Yeah, exactly.
That's so funny. I used to record it and watch it all week again until it came back. I remember you'd VCR record.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Loved it.
I found when I was going through my other house to get the rest of my effects over here, I found a box full of tapes. And I'm pretty sure that box full of tapes is like old stuff I taped off of different channels or whatever. I used to love taping music videos.
Off the box and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Off just like MTV or whatever. And I would just like hit record. And I'd like, you know, I'd build a little library and I'd have them all like written down the time where they are on each tape and stuff. I had little folders with like, because you could fit like whatever, 60 music videos on a tape. So it'd be like all these folders with like, you know, timestamps and where and what music video it was, and like full music video or starts about 30 seconds in because I had to get to the remote, that kind of stuff, like little notes.
Yeah, no, I used to record Monster Vision at night because that stuff used to come on at like 1 o'clock in the morning with Joe Bob Briggs, and you know, I would just stay up recording like 4 hours of those movies. And some movies, I swear, those were the best versions. Like, I know that there was a version of Last of the Mohicans that I had off taped off like UPN or something. I have never seen. There's scenes I know were in that movie and they are not in the director's cut DVD. There's not in any of the other DVDs or Blu-ray versions that I've ever had, but it was the VHS version.
Wow.
And I'm like, that, and it's more of the story. And I think it was same with Legend too. There was a, we all know there's a million cuts of Legend, but the TV one, I'm telling you, was the best one because it had more contents of the two stories that were split in the one. And I like, I know I'm not, what is it, Mandela affecting myself? Mm-hmm. Like, I remember these scenes. I remember the dialogue. And they have, I've never found them in how many versions of these movies that I've bought. They don't have them. So it is interesting. God, the 90s TV was good.
I wonder if our, like, 90s babies one version of fandom, so, like, I think that, so the generation before us, the people who like sci-fi, were like a much smaller number of people, and it was a much like, I don't know, even a geekier set, and I think it's because it took so much work back then. Like, if you wanted to see every Star Trek episode in the 60s, you had to, like, I don't even know what you could do. Like, you couldn't even tape stuff yet, so like you had to like go to, you know, in the 70s and 80s, people were going to like swap meets and stuff and like finding old tapes of things and like being able to find whatever they could in whatever formats they could, you know, and just catching it on at night or catching it on a rerun somehow, somewhere. Like, there was just no way to get stuff. So if you really wanted to be a nerd about that thing, if you wanted to know everything, you had to be on your couch at that time every week and take notes because you're never going to see it again for years. Like, it's crazy to think about that. But I mean, I had that experience too. We didn't really tape stuff when I was a kid even. So, like, it wasn't until I was, like, in high school that we even really, like, I think we had a VCR, but I wasn't allowed to use it. And we didn't have tapes. I don't know. Whatever. We didn't have, like, blank tapes, you know? So, like, I don't know. My point is, I think as it has become easier to become a fan of these genre stories, those genre stories that these people that were, like, seeking them out like truffle pigs, you know, like they were just like seeking out everything they could to know every little bit about these things. The reason they did that was because the stories were worth it. And now we're like, we're in an age where the stories are still some of the great stories, all the sci-fi and interesting genre tales, but they're way more widely spread because way more people have the opportunity to watch it without like having to dig so deeply. But I wonder, and we're sort of in the middle. We're in the middle where we could tape stuff, we could rent stuff, but like it was like you could rent them like 3 episodes at a time. When we were kids, it was a VHS tape with 2 episodes. That's all you could rent.
Yeah.
Of things. And so it's like, I don't know. I wonder if that causes a greater affection for the thing because you have to seek it out so much, you know?
Yeah, probably. We're like little modern day treasure hunters trying to find all this crazy stuff. Because like as a kid, I remember you would hear about certain horror movies that were like impossible to find or never shown on TV and things like that. And then you would go on this endless search and you would ask every VHS, you know, West Coast video or the like video dens, the ones that weren't the big ones, but had, you know, just in the strip malls, there are these random rental stores. And that's the one I'm going in there at 9, like, do you have Cannibal Holocaust? And they're like, no, you can't watch that movie, child. And no, they don't have that. That was a one of those movies that for all the 80s and 90s was banned in our country and in tons of other countries. So that made it more, you know, like, I want to see this movie because it's, you know, that holy grail of horror movies you can't get. Mm. And it's stuff like that that I think makes you start to like the Blair Witch Project. Like when the Blair Witch Project came out, I didn't know that that wasn't real. And internet had just come out. And we went into this on our episode about it. 15-year-old me was like, I got to solve this case. And I was so into it. And I was just learning how to use the internet. And like that was my first time realizing, oh, I'm really into true crime documentaries or stuff like that. Because then I found out that that wasn't real. And I was like, that was a weird thing that happened to me because it took over my life for like a week. I would get home from school and I would go right to my and I was like, I'm going to solve this. These kids are missing. I got to get the help. You know, we got to find them at 15.
That's so
and I'm
funny.
Like, oh, I like murder and true crime, apparently. And now I am like the obsession with true crime. It's just interesting how all of it came about.
Yeah, absolutely. Huh. Interesting. Well, I think it all ties into the stuff that we're talking about, the MCU and Star Wars, Star Trek. Like, me and Dave Robertson has talked about it a lot on Star Trek because, like, for so long, Star Trek was so rare. And it is a thing that we sought out and we had to find. And that is my example of all those things when I talk about them, about finding things on tape and, like, eventually taping them myself and eventually being able to get them, you know, from DVD stores and eventually being able to strain them. Like, I'm talking about Star Trek because that's the show that I grew up with. And it was, like, it was a part of every one of those things for me. Mm-hmm. But now, Star Trek comes out every week, almost. We're in a bit of a gap right now, but, like, almost every week, they did the Marvel Star Wars model for like the last 2 years, where it's like every week there's a new Star Trek thing, and it starts to feel less valuable, and it's a real bummer. And I really like have a hard time differentiating between like, is it because it's not as good because it's not having the same care? You know what I mean? Like, are they taking less care with it because they're just trying to throw as much at the wall and see what sticks, or is it just less value because of the laws of supply and demand? They're like shoving so much supply in the chain that like I don't care as much, you know, like there'll be another one next week, so I don't care as much about this episode.
Interesting.
It's really hard to know. And I think that's sort of what MCU is struggling with when it comes to like putting out so much the last few years and like going all the way back. Like, I think the MCU kind of hit at this perfect time where we're finally able to tell these stories, these very, like, geeky genre, nerdy stories, but everyone has access to every one of those movies in some easy form. Ever since Iron Man and streaming has been alive, like, you could get that movie if you wanted it. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
And so, no one was excluded by needing to seek the movie out. And now we've reached a point where like they're almost like feeding it to us and like almost at a clip that we can't take it. And it's like, we can't keep up, or some people can't keep up.
Yeah.
And you can only keep up with one universe at a time. It feels like if you're still watching all of the Marvel stuff, it's hard to keep up with the Star Wars stuff too sometimes, you know, especially if they're both running a show at the same time.
I remember when Disney Plus first came out and I'm literally wearing the X-Men shirt from the animated series. I was like, floored, because I hadn't only not really thought about the animated series in a long time. I never thought I was going to be able to actually watch the entire thing all the way through. I thought, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to watch this whole thing. I don't think I got through like season one or two, because then there was more stuff, and then we had to do the show, and we had stuff to watch, and then there was Star Wars stuff, and then there's this other stuff, and then there's movies, and then there's my podcast, so I'm watching the horror stuff. And I did kind of let that get to the wayside, and I feel like when they start to really bring in the X-Men, I'm going to go back and deep dive watch that again, because I do hope that they follow a lot of the storylines in that, because it'll be easier for people to relate to these characters if you can go back and watch that series.
There's even some speculation that like that's the version that's coming to the movies. Like, those actual characters from the cartoon are going to travel the multiverse, and like the suit that we've seen. Spoiler leak alert, not too bad, because I think it's pretty ubiquitous, but we've seen suits from the Deadpool sets that like have Wolverine in a very similar suit to his cartoon counterpart.
I can't wait for Deadpool. I cannot wait for Deadpool.
May! I've been thinking about that. Like, I was thinking about that this morning because I've been sort of feeling like we don't even know what's next. It feels like nothing's coming out. I'm feeling a little aimless with the podcast because there's not a lot of stuff. Like, we've got feedback to talk about. And, like, obviously, we're 20 minutes in now and I've just brought up a Screen Crush video. We've talked for 20 minutes. But, like, May is not far away. We're 4 months away from freaking Deadpool. And that is
so much rhyming.
What did I do? I didn't even know.
You were like, May, it's not that far away. It's so close to May. I don't know. You'll hear it when you go back. It's very cute.
It's funny. But yeah, we're so freaking close. And I think that's the one, I think I said when we did our like most excited for this year, I think that was mine. Like, I am most excited for Deadpool 3. I'm excited for a lot of things, but Deadpool 3, Agatha, very, very exciting. But Deadpool 3 is like, it's my jam.
I'm excited too. I just can't wait to see what they're going to... That's why I've been... besides, like, that leak picture, because I think even Hugh Jackman posted that. I'm trying to avoid leaks and spoilers and that for that, like, the plague, because I just want to be surprised. I can't wait.
Yeah. I think, like, they have a real opportunity, because Deadpool... So, part of the problem with the MCU right now, I think, is that a problem, not creatively, but, like, financially or audience-wise, is that, like... A lot of people, it's hard to, the properties that they're currently running are not the most popular properties. They're just like, they're a little bit more niche. I feel like a lot of the stuff we've gotten the last 2-3 years has been a little more niche. They're not doing Avengers movies. They're not doing Captain America. They're not doing Iron Man. And those are the three like tent poles. And everything else is always sort of like swirled around those things. The Ant-Mans, the Doctor Stranges, anything that's not the original four is like a little bit off to the side. And even this year, Thor Love and Thunder felt like it was a little off the beaten path because I think Ragnarok took Thor in a direction where he no longer feels like the core story. It's so silly that it makes it feel frivolous. In a way that, like, I don't think Thor Love and Thunder was, but I think, like, it's almost like there's pre-Ragnarok Thor and there's post-Ragnarok Thor, and they're almost, like, different characters. Same actor feels very so different that, like...
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, it feels like it's to be taken a little less seriously for whatever, you know, I think all the comedy reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So we end up getting these sort of smaller audiences for these movies because they're not tying to the original four like they used to. Deadpool is, like, an out of left field. Everyone loves Deadpool. Deadpool is like the first two movies are great. They are completely separate from the MCU and they were beloved in the level of an MCU movie. They're rated R. So they're like, they are inherently a little more niche, but the thing I always thought about Deadpool is similar to Thor. I've always thought of him as kind of frivolous. Like, I'm not expecting it to change the Marvel universe when I see Deadpool, a Deadpool movie, but this one I am. So it's got like all of the fun and like great, like the romance, the like humor, all of the like great action of a Deadpool movie. And they've always had great heart, but now it's coming. They're smashing into the MCU. And like, what are they going to do? I'm so excited.
I know. If Michael Fassbender shows up, just know somewhere my heart has exploded.
Yeah.
Because I am so excited just to see all the different people that they can bring in.
Me too.
Just to see them one more time, you know?
Or not just one more time. I know. Michael Fassbender's older now, and if he came in as like a, you know, 15, 20-year-older Magneto, and he's like getting probably, I don't know, I'd have to look at the ages, but he's probably not too far off the Ian McKellen, like, era. I think we've looked at it before, like he's almost there. Like if they gray him up, let him go gray, let him be the character from comics,
have him be the full-blown, you know,
be so Genosha good.
Running Magneto, be a bad guy, like have it happen.
Like, and this thing, it's actually genius, and I know we've talked about it before, but like we've talked about a lot of ways of like how do you do Magneto specifically if he's not connected to his heritage and stuff in World War II and all this stuff? Like, we've talked a lot about that and like ways they could do that. But if they shift those X-Men that are currently like, for them, it's like the year 2000, but those two universes collide and we have those year 2000-ish X-Men join into the MCU, and then suddenly like all those first class, which I think were like, pardon the pun, but first class, like actors and like those stories are not bad. Like,
Right.
Maybe one of them. But like most of them are really, really good. Like the actors are really, really good. Bring them over and let them take those roles that like now they're old enough to have. You know what I mean? It's just like, right, it seems right. So perfect. Oh, I want it so bad. You know what? We're gonna we have some feedback to read. But
oh yeah, feedback, the bag.
Yeah, yeah. Let's do that. But first, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back with lots of feedback. We're back.
And we're back.
So let's just jump right into the feedback before I just start talking again. Like this was supposed to be about
you're
the
such
people.
A derailer. Actually.
I know. Dylan Frazinas, one of our patrons, says, quick thing I thought was funny. In the podcast with Baby Matt and Jeff about the Iron Man 3 rewatch, you guys were talking about how you'd in the future love to see Doctor Strange go against Wanda. And then Jeff said, magic on magic, which he then, so it says mom in his feedback, come on, you damn time travelers.
That's pretty funny.
Pretty good. It's pretty good. And we definitely like, we called that from way back. Woo.
Ooh.
Iron Man 3. Love it. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Dylan. Up next, Ben Tamino says, hello, Panda fam. We got married.
Oh, that was the guy who sent in the thing. He was saying that they were getting married and having like a marble. That's adorable.
Yeah, and I think we read it like right before the wedding. He said we read it just in time to tell their like Marvel story before Marvel love story. He says, you couldn't have timed the reading of the Marvel love story better. It was perfect. You aired it 5 days before our wedding. Thank you.
Ah, there it is.
That's amazing. Thank you, Ben. Let's see. You were both saying how you like non-traditional weddings that incorporate things we love. Ours was really the perfect blend of tradition and a personal touch. Not only did we say for all time and always instead of I do. Oh, I love that. Mm-hmm. I love it. That makes me giddy. I didn't pre-read this feedback, and that makes me giddy. I love it.
Yeah, well, this ding-dong for you soon, so wedding bells are about.
I am engaged, so that's a good one. I like that. I think she might go for it. And he says, but my mom and sister officiated our very personal non-religious ceremony together. My brother's bluegrass band played the ceremony with Elise walking down the aisle to a beautiful fiddle instrumental version of I Want to Grow Old With You from The Wedding Singer.
Aww.
That's great. Which they learned at our request. We cut the cake to Come and Get Your Love by Redbone. From Awesome Mix Volume 1. Nice. Mm-hmm. Our wedding was truly perfect. It was hilarious when everyone sat down for dinner and suddenly the speakers were blasting Ooga Chaka, Ooga, Ooga, Ooga Chaka as a ton of feeling started playing. People were dancing right up until the end of the night, which says a lot considering it was a Sunday. Elise's uncle even took the mic and performed Ice Ice Baby at one point. LMAO. Thank you so much for reading our love story on the air. It was amazing to hear it right before our wedding, and we listened to it many times since. Aww.
Aww.
It really was the icing on our wedding cake. That, and of course, Marvel's wedding gift of Loki Season 2, which was absolute perfection. You guys are the best. Lots of hearts. All for all time, always, Ben and Elise.
Are we married now, then?
I think we married.
Did we just get married to Ben and Elise?
I think we're in a quintuple.
Oh, no, that's so, congratulations, you guys. That's so cute.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Thanks for the follow-up. And I did watch, he sent their video in, and I did watch all of it, and it was beautiful. Their colors were really nice. That's awesome. They looked great.
That's beautiful. Well, Ben and Elise, congratulations. Love to see it. Love to see just, like, love on the terms that you guys believe in and like can like, you know, connect on these things that you guys care about. It's just freaking awesome. I love it. I love it. Up next, John Irons, our good friend from Captain Game Show. I got to hang out with him a couple weeks ago. He was in Birmingham. He's from here, but moved to DC, I think. But he was back in town to visit family or whatever. And so me and David Robertson from Star Trek Universe and DC On Screen went over and chilled with him, and it was great. It was really nice.
I remember meeting him at Dragon Con.
Yeah. That was a good time. Mm-hmm. Anyway, John Iron says, hey guys, listening to the Tangent episode now and heard Jeff call the Wanda version of Game of Thrones the Wicker Throne. Allow me to humbly submit Game of Crones. Thank you for your time, Lee. John Irons. Well, Victor Timely reference. John Irons, you never disappoint. You never disappoint with the puns and such. Wordplay. Not exactly a pun, I guess. Game of Crones. Just wordplay. Just rhyming, really. Good.
Wanda version of Game of Thrones, the Wicker Throne. I don't get it.
I think he's just like, I think that's something Jeff said in a different right. I guess. Like, he was saying Wicker Throne, like, instead of, I don't know, Wicker just made it sound witchy to him. Like, Wicker.
Like, the Wicker Man?
I don't think he means that. I don't know. I think he...
Wicker baskets?
Yeah, like, Wicker basket. Like, it would look witchy. Like, instead of big, I think he means instead of big swords, it's like, okay. Kind of like a wicker, like, witchy kind of basket-looking throne.
Okay, I got you.
But you're far more into the witchy stuff than he is, so you probably have a better version of that.
I'm just picturing those chairs at the beach that people have usually on their porches with the big, just, like, wicker. That just look comfortable.
Yeah. I hear you.
That early 90s wicker.
Yeah. I like Game of Thrones. That's good.
Yeah.
Todd Fitzhugh says, hi, guys. So I listened to the cast the other day where you guys were talking about Captain Marvel and the hate she, Brie Larson, sometimes gets. Ashley briefly used me as a possible example of someone who dislikes Captain Marvel based purely on her character as opposed to her being a female with power or because of things that Brie Larson herself has done. Okay. I just wanted to confirm that was totally the case. I'm not really a movie guy, so know nothing about Brie Larson's other films and haven't even heard of what she's done regarding the Me Too movement. As a dad of three girls myself, I completely and wholeheartedly love female superheroes, fictional or in real life. Scarlet Witch is absurdly my favorite Avenger. Sorry. So,
it's like,
I read that wrong.
Should I just let him go with that?
I was like, I thought he, like, I read it as absurdly. He said arguably my favorite Avenger. I read it as absurdly. Like, I thought he was going to be like, say, like, she's absurdly awesome. But it made it sound like I was saying, like, she, absurdly, she's my favorite. Sorry about that, Todd. Trying again. Scarlet Witch is arguably my favorite Avenger, and who doesn't love Nat? Valkyrie is great. Miss Marvel is the sweetest. Love Gamora and Nebula. Shuri is brilliant, and even the Wasp is pretty cool. Oh, poor Janet. Oh, on the lower end.
Or is he being Hope? Who are we talking about?
Any of the wasps, I guess. I love that I watch the MCU with my eldest daughter, and I really hope she feels empowered by these characters or the actresses that portray them. I reckon there are hundreds of millions of women on this planet that are stronger, smarter, and more competent than me, and I'm completely okay with that. Even looking closer to home and arguably much more important, the addition of Miss Ashley to the MCU cast has been a revelation. I love her frank and honest opinions, and I 100% respect them as much as I do the guys. She really needs a pay rise.
Yes, a pay rise. If you don't say it right, does that mean you don't have to do it?
That's right. Yeah, see?
You didn't do it right, Todd!
He misspelled pay raise and, like, sorry.
So now I'm not going to get it. Yeah.
I think my slightly negative opinion on Captain Marvel is purely based on the first Captain Marvel film, which I didn't really warm to, and I just didn't ever feel like I knew who she was personally. Since then, despite her cool appearance in Endgame, that hasn't really changed much. The Marvels was the most we've had out of her, character depth and personality-wise, but even then, I felt like she kept getting outshone by the brilliant Miss Marvel. I don't hate Captain Marvel, and like Matt says, I'll definitely be rooting harder for her the next time I see her. But the reason she is further down the list of my own favorite Avenger is solely based on the character and nothing else. Keep up the amazing works, you beautiful legends, Todd.
And I get where Todd's coming from here. I mean, we are in a weird place where if you're negative about that, say he were to post on the page like, God, I wasn't really feeling Miss Marvel or Captain Marvel in this one, you're going to get attacked. And that's why I know what he's talking about now, the email that he wrote in the last time where I was, you know, it's okay if you don't resonate with a character. And it doesn't have to be for any other reason than you don't resonate with that character. I don't really care for Korg. Sue me. He's funny. I get it. It's cute. It was cute the first time. He can be there. He can stay there. He can do whatever he wants. He can be in every scene. It's not my favorite.
Your thing.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
You know? And that's
completely,
okay.
Completely, completely true. And I think it is a really interesting place. And it's, you know, it's the whole divided nature of our politics and people. And like, it is a real bummer because like, yes, there are people that will jump on you if you don't like Captain Marvel and just be like,
you don't like women.
You're a sexist. Yeah. Like you're a sexist. Yeah. That's why. And like, I've talked about my journey with Captain Marvel and how like I had some unexamined, I think, not even necessarily sexism, but unexamined lack of a point of view taking when I watched the first Captain Marvel the first time. And it took me a few times of listening to women who'd had similar experiences to make me appreciate some of that movie that I didn't appreciate before. But the issue is, it's like, if it's like, if you don't like a male character or whatever, like no one jumps on you about it. But like, if you don't like a female character, they will jump on you about it. But like, and it sucks. Cause I get it. I get the defensiveness of a powerful female character, like I am too. And it's like, it's such a context, like you got to listen to how someone says something, what they say, because like it can absolutely be a sexist comment to talk about Captain Marvel in a certain way, but it right. also can just be a thing a person feels about a character and they're not into it. Like, it's a real bummer that we have such a hard time communicating these things, but also like, I get completely why people need to have that defensiveness, their shields up when someone right. comes around talking crap about Captain Marvel, because so much of the internet, that is a problem.
Right, right.
So yeah, it's tough. It's really tough.
I wonder if the Eternals has had more of an upkick now that Barry Keoghan is so popular right now. He's kind of like an it boy from Saltburn. I wonder if there will be more of a like, oh, we should do another Eternals movie now, or at least do something with him. I wonder what his contract is with them, because now would be the time to do something while he is in the midst of this being, you know, super popular, super talked about, and super seen. It's just yes. interesting, because like, I didn't really care for the Eternals, but in the Eternals, he stood out to me mm-hmm. as I really like this character. I want to know what's going on with him. And
The
quick one. Yeah.
Makari,
god damn it, so you close. Samsonite, I was way off. But yeah, like I would watch a movie about the two of them running around doing
absolutely.
Whatever.
Absolutely. And I think that it's so interesting. Druig, I feel like, was not necessarily written to be as compelling as he was. I think, and in the comics, he's kind of like a hit or miss, good guy, bad guy kind of guy.
But I love that.
And I do too. But like, and so many great characters in the MCU and elsewhere are that. But I don't think Druig was written to be amazing, but like the actor really like pulled him off in a way that, mm-hmm. and the same thing with Makari. Like I really loved seeing both of them, and then seeing them have that little bit of a connection that wasn't fully explored. It was just kind of like, oh, mm-hmm. they care about each other for some reason. I would 100% watch that movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been saying it all along since that movie came out, but I think that like it could have been very well suited to just do like, if they had done the Eternals as like four different movies, like do a Makari and Druig focused movie where you have certain scenes that cross over and like that all of them are in, but then, you know, you go back to their story and then you have a full story about each of them or little groups of them that sort of goes through time. I think that would have been the way to do that. But obviously that's making four movies instead of one, whatever. Well,
they should have done it on Disney Plus, and I will never get off of that. Like, you had the TV, you know, you have the streaming thing. Mm-hmm. It's smart to do it. You did it before Ms. Marvel. You've done it before a couple. If you would have given everybody even just like a, I don't know, one episode about each of them going into depth a little bit, let us know who they are. Let us know their connection. Don't make me have to learn all of these characters for, you know, the casual person who doesn't know who they are at all. You're like, who are these people? I don't even remember everybody's name by the end, and you expect me to have emotional connections to their story and care what happens? I don't. Yeah. But if they would have just done a series called The Eternals, one episode for each of them before it came out and showed how they tied into each other over the years, do it animated. Listen to me. I don't care what you do. Give us some context, you know?
Yeah, it's just too much. It's too much to pack into one movie. And I've also said, like, they put it out a lot of different ways. The way they did it was like inherently problematic. Trying to introduce 10 characters and giving them sort of equal weight through the movie is not the way to go. And I say equal weight with some understanding that there was a focus on a couple of characters, but like not enough. It felt like they wanted to write a movie about one of them and sort of like have the characters sort of like be focused on these two or three, and the others were supposed to just be ancillary. But then over time, it sort of built up, and like they got really good actors in those roles, and they just wanted to keep expanding. It just felt like they gave too much to everybody, and I couldn't care about everybody before it's all over. Mm-mm. Anyway, again, well-trodden territory. Sorry. Jordan Peterson says, "Hey guys, just found your podcast and love it. Listening to 1117's show about the Spider-Verse, and I'm totally with you on coming around to it. I think Spider-Verse or Sony-Verse, I think he means the Sony Spider-Man-Verse is what I was talking to about, I think. Okay, I have a theory that I think would be awesome. If these villains / anti-hero movies without Spider-Man is because all of these movies take place in a universe from across the Spider-Verse that doesn't have a Spider-Man because Miles Morales got it.
Was killed, I guess?
I don't know what he means by, because Miles Morales got it. Maybe killed. Then at the end of the third Spider-Verse movie, Miles Morales stays in the universe with no Spider-Man, and we get a live-action Miles Morales with all these developed villains. Tying it together, it would be so cool. Just had to share it with you guys. Thanks for the great show, Jordan."
Maybe he means got it, like able to travel the multiverse?
Right. Spider-Verse that doesn't have Spider-Man because Miles Morales got it. I think it was just a typo. But
okay.
I don't know what he means exactly. But like, I think he's saying that, like, what if that's where this goes? That becomes the Miles Morales Spider-Man, like, verse. And,
right.
And it's just that, like, though, I guess in this story, there was never a Peter Parker Spider-Man, and Miles Morales is a little younger, comes around a little later, and there's all these villains that are already established, and he has to sort of, like, learn to navigate it.
Yeah.
That sounds rad. I've talked before, I'd love to see that. I'd love to see a live action Miles Morales in any way. I would even love for them to bring in the Spider-Verse version of Miles Morales as our MCU Spider-Man. Like, I think it would be amazing because I love that character. Mm-hmm. And I think they've done a great job setting it up. He's already traveling the multiverse. Like, just do it. I do think that tying together, Sony owns it all, tying together the Spider-Verse and the Sony-Verse would be a really good, smart choice. Really smart.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, man. I am, when does Madam Web come out? Is that sooner than later?
Valentine's Day.
Okay. I'll be there. I'll probably podcast about it. I don't know who will join me, but I'll probably podcast about it. It doesn't look particularly good, I'll admit.
It doesn't. Well, I'm just like, why did they get what's-her-face? You'll have to tell me if she has any kind of emotions, because she's always just like, oh no, here comes a truck. I told you to get out of the way.
Here's the thing, though.
She's always just going to be 50 Shades to me.
I hear you. I've never seen 50 Shades, but I still know her from that because of all the marketing campaigns. A good movie can sometimes take a character that is not a great, not an interesting protagonist. We've talked about it before, but the idea of the neutral mask, where like the main character isn't the interesting one, they're the boring one, and everyone around them is interesting. this could be that. You know, like, it could be that, like, there's lots of great, interesting characters, and we care about her because we can see through her eyes, because we are the audience. We project ourselves onto that blank canvas, as I'll call her, which sounds insulting, and I meant it that way. But no, I've never seen anything with her in it. I can't really...
I've seen a lot.
Have you?
Well, did you ever see Bad Times at the El Royale with Chris Hemsworth? Oh, yeah,
I did see that.
She was the girl, the sister of the sister that was in his cult.
Okay, I didn't remember her being in that.
Well, you don't remember her because she's boring.
I do love that movie, though.
Yep. She was in this Jane Austen version of Persuasion, which was just a catastrophe on Netflix. And that was almost insulting to people who like Jane Austen stories. yeah, it was just, you know, she's in some stuff.
Okay. Okay.
I don't dislike her as a person. I think she's beautiful. And I think that she has great fashion. And she's with Chris Martin, so that must be fun. Mm-hmm. But yeah, as for acting, I mean, she's got two very... very famous parents and a very famous stepfather. So
I have no idea who she is. I don't even know her name.
Melanie Griffith is her mom, and Don Johnson is her dad. Okay. She's Dakota Johnson. Oh. Her stepfather is Antonio Banderas.
I had no idea.
Her grandmother's like Betty Davis, or one of the dames from Golden Age of Hollywood. What's the word they call them all? Nepos?
Nepo babies.
I would go with that with her.
Yeah, I have not been impressed with her yet. And I will say, like, The trailer looks a little trash, but part of it is just the trailer. Like, I think some of those lines that are so bad were, like there's that line that everyone makes fun of. When he was working with my parents in the rainforest, or whatever it is, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah. And we were collecting spiders.
Like, it's terrible. I don't think that's going to be in the movie. I think that was, like, some line they had to read in a box 3 months ago because they were trying to make a trailer. And, like...
yeah.
It's probably, maybe the movie itself is well done, but that trailer did not do that movie any favors. But it does seem like they're doing something with the multiverse, and I'm interested in what the Sonyverse is doing, just like we're just talking about with Jordan's feedback. So, like, I'm going to go see it because I've been saying it. I got to put my theater dollar where my mouth is, because I've been saying I'm more interested in Sonyverse. I'm going to go see Madam Web, even though it's probably the one I'm least interested in that I've seen a trailer for.
Did Kraven come out yet, or is that at some point?
No.
Kraven the Hunter?
It has not. So I'll go see that too.
I'm going to go see that one because I'm a shallow girl. I just want to see them abs. No, I'm just kidding. He's so cute, and he's gotten to be in so many different Marvel things, and I'm just
superhero,
okay,
things
keep
in
it
general.
Going.
Yeah,
good for you. Yeah,
he was Kick-Ass too, right?
Oh yeah,
I love Kick-Ass. I was going through my comics this week
too,
and like Kick-Ass is one of those few like comic book series that I bought like the first issue as it was coming out, and so I have like the first five or six issues.
Oh,
and,
cool!
Like, and yeah, it was kind of neat going through them. And, like, hey, I still have these. That's awesome. That's one I read before it, you know, before it was a movie or whatever. And I really like
it. Yeah. That's fun.
Dig it. Okay. We're going to do one last one. Let's see. This one is a little Echo related. So if you've not seen Echo, I there may be spoilers. I just noticed there's some Echo stuff in here. Kyan says, how Nicken, high friend, M-A-J, that's us. Hopefully this doesn't get too long-winded. I am a Potawatomi woman and Oklahoman, and I would like to voice my thoughts.
Here is your pedestal. Go ahead, girl.
Yes. Thanks for writing in. First, some housekeeping. Matt, you were not given a fair shakedown. Choctaw are not from Oklahoma or the Midwest. They are from Mississippi, Louisiana, and as you said, Alabama. Tribes were relocated by force to Oklahoma. Yes, someone else.
I sensed it.
Yeah.
I sensed it.
Yeah, someone else wrote in about that, too, on the Stranded Panda chat. There was some conversation about that.
The Trail of Tears, which we completely didn't even bring up.
Yeah, we did not. And I know the Trail of Tears, like, I know a little bit about it, but I didn't know, like, where they left from and where they were forced to go to and all that. I didn't really know.
Yeah. It would have been nice if they added that in there.
I agree. I was, someone else, again, there was a little chat on this about, it's on the Stranded Panda chat on Facebook, and, like, someone brought up the point about the partition in Ms. Marvel, and how they like it, they didn't take too long away from the story to like give us a little context about the history of her people. And like, I think a little bit of that could have been good here. I think they were trying not to hit us over the head with it, but I think a little bit of that could have been really great, because it does feel a little bit like they didn't. You know, it's not their, it's not their job to inform us on that, but it would have been a nice thing, I think.
Right, right.
Continuing Cayenne's feedback, you were right to see similarities between Kahori's story and the origins of the Choctaw people in Echo. They looked so very similar. It's important to know that just because tribes are very different, that through anthropological history, many tribes have come and gone, formed alliances, and created stories. Many stories and legends share similar themes between tribes because of the constantly evolving societies in pre-colonialism North America. Anyways, Oklahoma news outlets have released so much content about how much Marvel worked with the Choctaw people to create this and be a good representation of the Choctaw people. As a native, I was excited but still skeptical. Kahori set the bar pretty high, even looking past the kind of Avatar Pocahontas vibes.
I understand what she means.
Totally know what she means. And at least in this version, the colonialists are all the bad guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. For me, it felt so forced. It felt like they spent more time on the Hollywood stereotype of what Native Americans are like that it no longer felt human. The dialogue felt more like gentle, carrying the idea of Native America in a child's show than it did in something TVMA. For as large and powerful as the Choctaw Nation is, we are really going to show a powwow reminiscent of a Hallmark Christmas-esque county fair. It was so tiny. Maybe I'm being too critical, or maybe I was too happy with Reservation Dogs, that seeing some of the actors just have to be so one-dimensional gave me the ick. So much of it did not feel like an accurate representation of Native peoples. It felt like an accurate representation of how Hollywood wants to tiptoe around them. It didn't feel like a show about people, just the idea of the people, if that makes sense. Then, her final fight outfit, I can't.
Oh
no!
I love the outfit.
Yeah, it was cool.
At the end, there's a superhero outfit.
Yeah,
you know,
it was cool
gotta do
to
it.
Me as a superhero outfit. I don't know how it represents these people. Let's see. Continuing Kyan's feedback, I find it odd that we can fall into made up worlds and culture like Wakanda so easily, but anytime it's legitimate tribes, it feels fake. Then again, maybe that's just because of my close adjudication of native culture. Someone from Africa might find Wakanda a bit off, so take what I'm saying with a grain of salt. It's been a really great time for tribal representation, but this just felt so flat. Don't get me wrong, there was so much I liked about this. Several tribal police departments are still referred to as Light Horse. It was really cool seeing that mentioned. The old Welcome to Oklahoma sign, they have all since been replaced by a very ugly Travel Oklahoma sign, so low-key nostalgic. Wish they would have filmed in Oklahoma, but I'll get what we can. The opening scene with the first Choctaw, I love creation stories, and I loved this adaptation. Thanks for reading all of this, if you did. On your left, Pepper, which I did. I love the name Pepper. Your name being Cayenne, I love it. It's really good.
Cute.
I did that. I was like, wait, she's got two names, and Ashley was like, yeah, Cayenne and Pepper. I was like, oh, I get it. I get it. Love it. Thank you very much, Pepper.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, for sure. I do think there's something to be said for like you said, people from Africa would look at Wakanda and go like, It's like, you know, it's a Disney-fied version of that thing, you know, and like, right. Obviously Wakanda's not real, and so they are trying to make it fantastical to some degree, whereas the Choctaw people are real, and like, they could have gotten more realistic, but I do think anytime you're trying to represent a people that anytime someone's trying to represent a people that you're a part of, it will come off a little false. Even like, you know, the culture I grew up in, when they're fully represented on screen, sometimes I'm like, that's not really, my dad's a Southern Baptist pastor. And like, so that gets lampooned all the time. And like a little more these days, often in a negative light. So it's sort of intentionally aggressive. The stories can be intentionally aggressive towards those people. And like,
right.
I can see what they're saying, but at the same time, it doesn't feel authentic to the way I grew up. You know what I mean? So it's interesting to that idea of like your representation. Can it ever live up to what you think? I mean, obviously she says Reservation Dogs is something that like really lived up, and I've heard that from other people. So I'd like to see that. Yeah. I haven't seen it yet.
They said a lot of the cast was in there.
Oh yeah. Cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool.
Oh, did you like seeing the grandma in Killers of the Flower Moon playing the grandma in this one?
Oh, yeah.
That was neat. I love her.
Yeah, she was awesome. Which we talked about, Killers of the Flower Moon, over on Bingers Assemble, which will be out in a couple days. We're waiting for the Oscars noms Wednesday. To drop. Wednesday, yeah.
So if you're listening to this on Friday, it will have just been Wednesday.
Yeah, so we should have some of our episodes about the Oscars up on Bingers by then, I think.
Yep.
At least one. We'll have one up there.
Yeah. I'll get you Ken Finish the Music, which is fun. So yeah. He's just got a couple tweakings with it, and I'll send it over. It's so fun. I really love our Oscar stuff. I was going to mention that at the end. Jump over to Bingers if you haven't already. The last 2 years, Matt and I have covered the Oscar movies, and then we do a lead-up episode, and then we do an aftermath episode. Just, yeah. You know, having fun with these movies and seeing films that you wouldn't usually watch, or just, you know, so having an idea going in of what's up this year and what we liked, what we didn't like. I just love it. Yeah. It's probably one of my favorite times of the year. And I like that we started doing it so much.
You go a lot deeper than I do because you watch every category.
Yeah, we go crazy.
Luckily, this year we started a little early. So I'm hoping we can get to more this year than we have in the past. But I really am pumped to see see all these movies that I don't normally watch. And this year, I talked about this on Multiverse News a couple weeks ago, but like, we did our top five of the year, and I couldn't, like, I didn't have a five on movies.
Oh,
like,
no.
I'd seen more than five, but, like, I saw four I really liked, and I couldn't, of all the other movies that I'd seen, it just wasn't that many, and, like, none of them felt like they belonged in a top five, and I was like, you know what? No, I'm just gonna say my top five is I need to watch more movies this year, because I felt really bad, and it's all the family stuff, and, like, the busyness of that, like, it just makes me sad because like that's what I love and do so much. It's why we do these podcasts, is because like we all love this stuff and watch it and soak it up and like live in these movies and these fictional worlds. And it's like a real bummer when I look back and like, oh, I missed a lot this year. I missed a lot.
Yeah.
Because normally we get to the Oscars and I'm like, oh, I've seen about half of them. This year I was like, I saw Barbie.
I was proud of you. You watched 2 3.5-hour movies in a day.
A day. I know. I kind of had to work during it, but like this month has been really light on music, so I had a little bit of time to catch up on things. I also watched Oppenheimer, so like when we get together on Wednesday, we can do our.
Yeah, we are recording Barbie and Oppenheimer in the same thing, because you have to stick with the Barbenheimer phenomenon.
For sure.
We're going to talk about that.
For sure. So we're going to talk about that this week. But yeah. Anyway, I don't know if we thank you to everybody who wrote in, but especially thank you, Cayenne, for the discussion of that representation, because like it's something that we don't have that perspective and we really appreciate.
Yeah, I really appreciated it.
So that's great. And I hate to hear it, because I heard so many people talking about how positive the representation was, and I hate to hear that it feels like, to some people, like, no, that's not it. That's not good representation.
It is Disney.
Yeah, it is.
They're
Disney.
The kings. Isn't it literally a word like, oh, they Disney-fied that? Like, oh, this is representation. Yep. Like if it was Disney-fied. So it is. It's disappointing, but not surprising.
Yeah, I think that's true. It's a bummer. But I
do better. They're trying.
They are trying.
Get the old college lowercase t.
It feels like Disney is always a few years behind with like the politics of what's going on in the world a little bit, where they're like, you know, like, well, we can be representational, but it still has to, you know, focus on characters that, like, the mass audience will understand. You know what I mean? They're always, like, trying to, like, straddle a line, or it's like, oh, yeah, we'll have it be representational, but it's still, like, this kind of Fisk's show, too. You know what I mean? Like, it's that, yeah. It's that thing. And not that I disliked that. I loved Echo, and I loved that Fisk was in it so much. But, yeah, it's this straddling the line of, like, including representation, but not, they never cross the line with, like the fact that they didn't bring up, like, the Trail of Tears, and they sort of, like, show the result of it, but never explain it, feels
right.
Like a deliberate leave out to me.
Yeah.
And that feels, this is probably controversial to say, but, like, that feels like that deliberateness of that feels like maybe something that was like, well, we don't want to get into, like, that. And I'm like, if you can't, like, just call out the Trail of Tears, you're really too far behind. Like, just, like,
exactly.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
It's like, I understand that, like, we're in a political moment where, like, half of the country or whatever, like, much smaller than half, but, like, a lot of people would think, oh, they're putting this woke stuff in my show. And it's like, no, the Trail of Tears was bad, and it happened. Like, this isn't woke shit. This is just the truth. And, like, yeah, that's why I love when these shows do teach me something that I didn't know. I know we've talked about it before, but, like, Watchmen, I had never heard of the Tulsa Race Massacre.
Oh, yeah, I remember when we were talking about that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you, those of you who don't know, the show Watchmen on HBO starts with the firebombing and, like, attacks, like, from the air of Tulsa, Oklahoma. Again, Oklahoma, actually.
Well,
and that's, again, we talked about Killers of the Flower Moon this week, and, like, that tied into Tulsa as well. But it's so wild that, like, in my life, I never heard of that. And it's, like, the only time American citizens had been, like, firebombed from the air, like, that bombs had been dropped on American citizens like that. And it's, like, you know, in America. It's like,
yeah,
that's crazy that's something they just didn't tell. And it's like, very deliberate that stuff gets
left out of history books and school. And
absolutely. Yeah. It's crazy. And so I love that. So the fact that this had that easy opportunity to tell that story, especially with, like, the discussion of where they were in the country and stuff, like, it would have made sense. Like, when she's talking about different ancestors, she could have mentioned, like, that was back when our tribe was in Alabama before.
Yeah.
That. And it would have been, like, a line that easy. It doesn't have to go in depth. And it could have at least, like, spurred on conversation and been like, oh, I didn't know about that thing, you know.
100%.
Anyway. Okay. So, we love you all. Anything else you wanna say, Ashley? Anything else you wanna
plug? No, I think I'm tapped out.
All right.
I am tapped out.
Cool. Well, check out all the other Strand and Pinna shows, strandandpinna.com. Pretty excited. Multiverse News is the other show I've really been trying to push lately. So if you got a chance and you want to see some, it may have even happened by the time this episode drops, because it's on Friday, but there's speculation that they might drop the cast for Fantastic Four this week. And over on Multiverse News, we'll hop on here as soon as we hear about it too, probably. But, like, it might take us till Tuesday to do that, but on Multiverse News, we're probably going to hop on and do an episode on that as soon as we know. So go subscribe to Multiverse News if you want a little quick news bites and hear what's going on in the world of other fictional universes from our perspective. So would love to hear from you. Hopefully you guys, talk to y'all soon. Peace.
Until next time, true believers.
Hey, you just listened to the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast from Stranded Panda. I really hope you liked it. Let me just say a big thank you to all of our supporters on patreon.com/MCUcast. You are the lifeblood of our little operation here. And a huge, huge thank you to our insanely generous Illuminati tier patrons, Walter Kreisky III, Lieutenant Bongo, and Jazz Viz. You guys are amazing. If you'd like to see our beautiful faces, you can catch a video version of many of our episodes at youtube.com/strandedpanda. Love you 3000, my friends.